Dr. Edgar Delving, welcome to El Microscopio.
Thank you very much.
So we will talk about vitamin D, and this interview is specially for clinicians, professionals in the laboratory, clinical chemists and nutritionists, and those who are interested in this topic. Our first question is, vitamin D is a hormone, and paracrine and autocrine factor. Could you please explain this?
Yes. Actually, when we talk about a vitamin, vitamin D should not be called as such. The reason is that we can, through skin, synthesize this compound, which we call vitamin D. And actually, it should be more considered as a pro-hormone. That means that once synthesized in the skin, it will be transported to the liver and to be hydroxylated, to be activated, and further to be activated in the kidney. And this is the kidney form, which is the active form of vitamin D. The vitamin D actually, the term vitamin actually is a contraction of two words, vital and amine. So this is another reason why vitamin D should not be called a vitamin, because it's not an amine and it's not vital because we are able to synthesize it. Now, in terms of its action, I mentioned in first that it's a hormone, so it's an endocrine. It could act as an endocrine hormone, but also it has action on local sites in special peripheral tissues where there is enzymes that will be able to synthesize the hormonal form or the active form of vitamin D, which is called 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D. And also have these cells have also receptors for that vitamin. So not only will it act as an endocrine hormone, but also it will act as a paracrine and then a paracrine and factor.
Yes, what's the primary role of vitamin D?
So the primary role of vitamin D is to assure a good quality of bone structure. If you are deficient in vitamin D, in children you will develop rickets and osteomalacia, and in adults you will, of course, develop osteomalacia only because in adults, there is no more a growth plate. The growth plate has been fused, and therefore the growth has been stopped. And the only effect of vitamin D on bone would therefore be osteomalacia. That and actually, this role was discovered over 100 years ago by Sir Edward Mellenby, who had conducted studies on beagle dogs, and showed that by depriving them of sunlight, they were developing bone problems. They would have bowed legs. And by replenishing them with a cod liver oil, they could restore the quality of bone. And then, of course, the rickets would go away. So that were the first discovery of vitamin D, as I say, early in the 20th century, last or the end of the 19th century.
What is the role of vitamin D in other biological systems?
Of course, over the years, a lot of research has occurred. And I think that as of the last, I would say, last 40 years, mainly, people have shown that vitamin D receptor, because as I said before, this compound acts like a hormone, it goes through receptors. So people have shown that there were receptors present in a number of cells or tissues, namely the pancreas, the liver, the muscle, and therefore people have said, well, if this is so, it may have an effect in other tissues. So people now think that vitamin D is important in different diseases such as diabetes, autoimmune disease, or in also in immunity For example, people suffering from AIDS, there are some data or retrospective data, mainly meta-analyses, that show that people with vitamin having an adequate vitamin D level would have a better prognosis of the disease.
What is the attitude in terms of vitamin D supplement action?
This is quite a problem. People, the term, we should first of all classify the level of vitamin D in blood as being deficient, insufficient, and sufficient. But once having said that, the problem lies in how do you define these thresholds? And there's quite a bit of controversy as to what is normal vitamin D or adequate vitamin D level. The problem lies in two or three reasons. The first being the difficulty in having normalized or harmonized measurement for vitamin D, for the 25-hydroxyvitamin D, which is the molecule that we measure in blood. To assess the vitamin D nutritional status, and the different methods will give you different results, and therefore, depending upon the lab in which you are going, you're likely to have different levels for the same sample. So that's inaccuracy in measurement of vitamin D makes it difficult to define threshold. The second point is that although we know with some confidence what are the levels of 25-hydroxyvitamin D in blood that you should have to prevent rickets or osteomalacia, it is less clear as what are the levels that are adequate for the other roles of vitamin D that I mentioned before, for example, in diabetes or in immune diseases. Therefore, I think that what we have to aim at mainly is to prevent vitamin D deficiency, that is the level or the threshold that would cause rickets. And usually this is at approximately 30 nanomoles per liter or 12 nanograms per deciliter, depending upon the unit that people are using. But in terms of the adequate level of vitamin D, or 25-hydroxyvitamin D to be more precise, the level that we should aim at should be approximately 75 to 100 nanomoles per liter, which would come out to 40 nanograms per ml at the maximum, nanograms per deciliter at the maximum. What we have also to avoid is to avoid vitamin D intoxication, and this can happen if you supplement people with large amount of vitamin D, such as 10,000 units per day.
And what is the evaluation of vitamin D nutritional status?
I've already touched on that a little bit before. The evaluation of vitamin D nutritional status is by measuring 25-hydroxyvitamin D in serum. I should repeat for those who may not have been there before that the vitamin D, once absorbed or formed in the skin, will be transported to the liver, where it will be hydroxylated to the 25-hydroxyvitamin D form. And this is the compound that we measure on a routine basis to assess the nutritional status. Now, in terms of technical approach, the measurement of 25-hydroxyvitamin D is usually done by immunoassays, and these immunoassays will give, as I said before, different results, which are likely then to confuse people to some extent. And lately, we also have a method based on tandem mass spectrometry, which is maybe limited to laboratory that have access to that type of technology. Now, this is in terms of the measurement of 25-hydroxyvitamin D. The question is, whom should we test for 25-hydroxyvitamin D? As a lot of people know, the laboratories have been swamped by an increasing amount of demand to measure 25-hydroxyvitamin D because physicians and nutritionists, to some extent, have used this test as a screening method to see what is the level of what is the nutritional status of people. Now, I think that measurement of 25-hydroxyvitamin D should be restricted to people at risk of having a deficiency. And such people are, for example, those people with malabsorption, with kidney problems, with liver problems, people, women, for example, in the age of osteoporosis, when the postmenopausal osteoporosis is reached. These are the risk population, and it should be restricted to those people, and also it should not be repeated over and over. Once you have a measure, that gives you the base level of 25-hydroxyvitamin D, you can go ahead and supplement people with vitamin D, mainly vitamin D3. And the Institute of Medicine and other societies suggest to supplement people with approximately 1,000 units of vitamin D per day. And of course, the upper tolerable limits for vitamin D supplementation would be 4,000 units. Now, this is for the general population. There are, of course, as I said before, people, population at risk, or people with special conditions in which the supplementation should be a little bit more aggressive.
Is there any final comment you would like to make? This has been all our questions.
Just to wrap up in a way, first of all, just to mention that vitamin D can be synthesized by the human skin, and the supplementing people with 1,000 units of vitamin D per day would suffice to provide enough of the vitamin for most of the biological systems in human. So I think that we should avoid to supplement people with very high doses of vitamin D, because this compound can be stored and you can have toxicity problems further on. That would be my final comment.
Well, thank you very much for your time. It's been a very interesting interview. Well, we hope to talk again in the future.
If people want to reach me, they can reach me on my email if they wish to further ask questions or comment on the vitamin D that we talked about today. They're all welcome, so there's no problem there.